But as you'll see in this podcast, there's a large amount of research to suggest that fruit juice is healthy for humans. On this week's podcast, I talk about a very controversial topic. It might get me banned from YouTube. No, it's not actually that controversial, but it is fruit juice, which sends people in all sorts of different camps into a tizzy. And I make an argument for why you should include fruit juice in your diet. I will provide many studies in this podcast that show benefits of fruit juice. I will talk about whether you should worry about glucose spikes, whether you should worry about insulin, the benefits of eating glucose, the benefits of including carbohydrates in your diet, specifically carbohydrates from sugar-containing foods like honey and fruit, which have been widely vilified, but I think have a very indispensable, valuable place in the human diet and always have evolutionarily. So I hope this podcast is helpful for many of you. Again, as I say in the podcast, I'm always open to other ideas. Would love to have people on the show who have differing ideas than mine. It's just been difficult to get them to engage with many of these conversations. So my belief is that fruit juice, and honey are beneficial for humans in the setting of an animal-based diet, a diet that is composed and centered around animal foods like well-raised meat, grass-fed, grass-finished meat, organs, especially fresh or organs from hardened soil supplements, desiccated organs. These are all valuable parts of an animal-based diet, along with fruit, honey, and raw dairy, which is delicious and something I've talked about in previous podcasts. So I hope this podcast is helpful for you, and that after this podcast, you will include a little more fruit juice in your diet and reap some of the benefits of this valuable type of food. I also believe that there's been a lot of discussion around fearing glucose spikes, and I wanted to attack this head on because I think this is not something humans should generally be afraid of. So enjoy this podcast, guys. Also want to thank my sponsors for this podcast. They make this podcast free. And start with my friend Monsel and his company, Sacred Hunting. You can find this at sacredhunting.com. With Monsel, when you go hunting, you'll learn the basics of how to track, stalk, kill, and field dress wild game animals. And with Sacred Hunting, you will have an added ritual and Native American component that makes it a rite of passage. I've been on two hunts with Monsel, a bow hunt for deer and a rifle hunt for black buck antelope. And these have been some of the coolest experiences I've had in the last few years. The people that are on these hunts are very intentional, conscious, and aware. The food is amazing because Monsel knows what's up. And it's not just a drive into the woods and go shoot some stuff type of hunt. This is a spiritual interaction with nature and an appreciation for the bounty that we have from her. Many times there are conversations about the ethics of eating meat. And if you have any of those concerns, I highly recommend that you hunt and understand where the meat that you eat comes from. Monsel has led over 54 in-person experiences, and he's done some surveys. 88.6% of people would continue hunting as a spiritual practice in their life, and 66% of people had major life changes after this kind of rite of passage. Women are welcome on the hunts now. Listeners of the Paul Saladino MD podcast will save $250 off their trip by mentioning my name. There are 6 spots available on each hunt, so visit sacredhunting.com, fill out the 2-minute application, and set up an exploratory call. That is sacredhunting.com. You guys will not regret going hunting with Monsel. He's an amazing human. Enjoy it. Also want to give a shout out to my friends at Kalima Sea Salt. You can go to drpaulsalt.com to get your free bag of Kalima Sea Salt. I'm not a fan of microplastics. This is why hardened soil is in glass bottles. I'm also not a fan of microplastics in my sea salt. Humans dump 8 million tons of garbage into the ocean, which is a bummer because that's where your table salt comes from. That garbage breaks down in tiny pieces called microplastics. Salt from the ocean crystallizes around those microplastics. That becomes the core of most salt crystals, which means when you're putting your salt on your food, you're eating tiny pieces of plastic bags, water bottles, and other garbage. A new study found that microplastics are found in 90% of all salt tested, but Kalima Sea Salt is free of ocean-borne microplastics. It's a delicious salt. It's crunchy. It's a great finishing salt. I like it so much I brought it to Costa Rica from the States because I can't get it here. It is hand-harvested on the Kalima salt flats in Mexico. So you'll be supporting Salineros by purchasing. It's 100% all natural, unrefined, handmade, hand harvested sea salt. Go to drpaulsalt.com to get your free bag of Kalima sea salt. Last but not least, got to give a shout out to my friends at Rizal, R-H-I-Z-A-L. They make an amazing set of grounding shoes, guys. I love these. They are leather uppers and leather soles with a grounding plug. And these guys are so cool at Rizal.co. They sent me a meter that tells me if I'm grounded. It's called a continuity meter. So I did some experiments and I stood on the ground barefoot. I'm grounded. I stand on a chair off the ground, not grounded. I stand on the ground in my Rizal grounded shoes. I'm grounded. That's so cool because it means that I can wear shoes to the grocery store, in parking lots, in places I'm afraid of stepping on things, like when I'm hiking or walking on dirt roads, that I don't want sharp things going in my feet, and I'm still grounded. And the shoes are, like I said, leather sole, leather upper. They're completely natural shoes. I love the way they feel. Their styling is very, I would say, chic. Dare I say chic? I don't know if I can say chic or I know anything about what is chic, but they're very cool looking shoes, and I really appreciate what they're doing at Rizal. So I think that being grounded is something that is widely underestimated, and getting shoes like this will help you be in connection with the earth and have this benefit of being grounded so much more often. And they're definitely a barefoot shoe. They're minimalist, they're super flexible. So it has everything that I'm looking for in a shoe. Minimalist, flexible shoes, zero heel drop, no arch support, it lets your feet be free, and they have a very wide toe box. So they're incredible. You can find them at Rizal.co, R-H-I-Z-A-L.co. Get 10% off your Rizal grounded shoes with the code Paul. Enjoy these guys. Let me know what you think of them. I love these shoes and recently had Ben Patrick out and he just bought a pair immediately when he saw how cool they were. So check them out, Rizal.co. On to the podcast. Love you all. Many of you will know that my story began with eczema and asthma when I was eating a paleo diet, an organic paleo diet with salads and nuts and fruit and meat and mushrooms, this kind of stuff. Olive oil that got better when I cut out all of the plant foods from my diet and did a strictly carnivore diet of meat and organs and animal fat and salt for about a year and a half. That resulted in some pretty significant electrolyte variabilities, electrolyte deficiencies leading to muscle cramps, sleep disturbances, including hypnagogic jerks. Like when I would go to sleep, I would have these jerks. Your body jerks you awake. This is related to a magnesium deficiency. Testosterone declining from what my baseline is usually 700 to 800 as a 46-year-old man on no hormone replacement to high 400s at times. And like I said, muscle cramps preventing me from doing things like rock climbing, et cetera. So at that point, I added honey and fruit back to my diet and began to feel gradually better. I've been eating an animal-based diet, which is a term that I've used to characterize a diet that I think is more evolutionarily consistent for humans than simply eating just meat and organs. Though I think meat and organs are the center of the human diet, all hunter-gatherer tribes will consume carbohydrates when they're presented with them. These hunter-gatherer tribes are equatorial, so these carbohydrates are present year-round. Certainly spending time with the Hadza reminded me of this. They ate lots of honey when we could get our hands on it, fruit when we could get our hands on it. Unquestionably, they were doing this. Adding fruit and honey back to my diet significantly improved all those issues. I've done multiple podcasts looking at my blood work, showing that my testosterone is quite high for a 46-year-old, again, 700-800, with a good sex hormone binding globulin. Again, when I was on a ketogenic diet without fruit and honey as carbohydrates, my sex hormone binding globulin was creeping up to over 125, et cetera. So there's been, I suppose, within the health space, a lot of acceptance of this idea of an animal-based diet, but I think that there has also been this resurgence around fearing glucose spikes. And in some communities of people who are really excited about eating meat, which I think is great, fear about eating fruit. Now, a lot of this may have been driven by the research of Robert Lustig, demonizing fructose, predominantly looking at processed fructose, sugar-sweetened beverages, sodas, and kids. And even Robert Lustig has said that he thinks fruit is fine for humans, but Robert Lustig wouldn't be a fan of fruit juice. And even people like Joe Rogan repeatedly say on his podcast, humans should not be drinking fruit juice. It's too much sugar. We would never have access to that. So recently I was doing some research and I kept coming across research showing the benefits of fruit juice. There's no shortage of the benefits of fruit juice. And so I wanted to do a podcast specifically on fruit and fruit juice to share this set of research with you guys so you can incorporate it into your own lives. And maybe this makes you curious about drinking some fresh squeezed orange juice or making some watermelon juice or even owning a juicer and making something like mango juice or removing the fiber from a fruit and drinking that. Because I think that that is something that a lot of people fear. But as you'll see in this podcast, there's a large amount of research to suggest that fruit juice is healthy for humans. And I don't know why Robert Lustig has ignored this research. I only mention him by name because he's well known in the space and because I invited him on the podcast and he won't come on the podcast. This seems to be a theme. But But I will share that research with you in this podcast. I will also talk about some of the other hesitations people have with fruit and sugar in their diet. And I will talk about why we should do those things, the benefits of including that in your diet, and some perhaps unique cases where fruit sugar, honey might not be great for humans. I think that there are cases like that out there, but they're more the exception than the rule. I'll also talk a little bit about this growing fear within the population around glucose spikes. I believe continuous glucose monitors are super valuable for understanding your insulin sensitivity and insulin resistance just by looking at the sort of phenotype, the way that your postprandial glucose looks continuously throughout the day, all of your glucose levels throughout the day, you can get a sense of how insulin sensitive you are. I think fasting insulin is another way to do that. But with continuous glucose monitors, I think has come this fear around anything that raises your blood sugar above fasting levels. And connected with that, this, in my belief, false inference or this false statement that any blood sugar spike is harmful for humans. Because clearly this is something that humans have been doing for hundreds of thousands of years, eating foods which spike their blood sugar. We see that in hunter-gatherer tribes, and there are benefits to doing that that I'll talk about in this podcast. Yes, benefits to spiking your blood sugar. I believe that improving the quality of your foods will improve your health, but I do not believe that anything that raises your blood sugar above baseline is bad for you. And I fear that sort of thinking within the health community, and I think that it limits people in terms of what foods they're going to consume. Now, let's just start high level with a lot of these ideas and say that if you look at people who are doing a strictly carnivorous diet with no carbohydrates in their diet, their fasting insulin will be low, around 3-4. If you add carbohydrates back to your diet, your fasting insulin will remain low. As I've shown multiple times on my blood work, my fasting insulin is around 3-4 micro IU per ml. Usually it's below 3 micro IU per ml. And I think for a healthy human, a fasting insulin should be less than 5 micro IU per ml. So if your doctor is not getting a fasting insulin on you, no matter what type of doctor you're going to see, your doctor has major blind spots. And if you heard the debate that I did with Dr. Allo, who I'm grateful for coming on the podcast, I think that a lot of his mainstream medical teaching inculcation had not equipped him to understand how to use fasting insulin and what true insulin resistance was in his patients, what prediabetes looks like, what insulin sensitivity really should be screened for in medicine. I think that's why a lot of blind spots happen with physicians and why a lot of people are continuing to have atherosclerosis, because we're not directing our efforts at the right metric. We're only looking at LDL. Go ahead and listen to the whole debate podcast if you want my full thoughts on that. If you are on a strictly ketogenic meat-based diet or a diet without carbohydrates, your fasting glucose will be higher, yes, higher than someone who includes carbohydrates. And this has been proven over and over and over. If you look at the continuous glucose monitor of someone who has zero carbohydrates in their diet, either on a ketogenic diet with plant foods or a strictly carnivorous diet of only animal foods, the fasting blood sugar, the fasting blood glucose may be 95, 100, 105. I've seen 106 from all sorts of people that have shared their fasting blood sugars, their fasting blood glucose. And it's a flat line, but that flat line is around 100. When I included carbohydrates in my diet, my fasting blood sugar went from around low to mid 90s to oftentimes mid 70s to high 70s. So fasting blood sugar gets better when you include carbohydrates in your diet, generally speaking. In fact, I would say for most humans, it gets better. Even if you have underlying diabetes or prediabetes, your fasting glucose will improve when you include carbohydrates. Because if you don't include carbohydrates in your diet, you will develop a type of insulin resistance. Now, this isn't pathological insulin resistance. This is physiologic insulin resistance. This is well documented. And it's the body conserving that glucose for tissues that like the glucose exclusively or want more of that glucose. The brain, the testicles, the ovaries, the adrenal glands, the red blood cells, these type of tissues need the glucose. And so it's spared from the muscles. The muscles become insulin resistant. The liver becomes somewhat insulin resistant physiologically when you don't include carbohydrates in your diet, or if you limit your carbohydrates significantly. This is why many people on zero carb or very low carb diets get a blood sugar spike and maybe don't feel normal or great the first day that they include carbohydrates in their diet. Because your body has to unpack all of that metabolic machinery. It has to move it out of a dusty attic storage, like the Christmas decorations, dust it off and start using it again. This happened to me when I included carbohydrates in my diet again. And it'll happen to many of you if you are transitioning from zero carb to including carbohydrates in your diet. But my belief is that most humans will do better long-term with carbohydrates in their diet. And as I've said before, I believe that including those carbohydrates as fruit and honey, contrary to what many in the health space would advise you, are the best, least toxic sources of carbohydrates, because those are the fruit, those are the honey. These are things without the defense chemicals that most of the vegetable components of plants that contain carbohydrates will contain. I've talked about this in detail many times in the past. Oatmeal, grains, these are less than ideal sources of carbohydrates for humans, in my strong belief. So again, I just wanted to give that sort of framework for all of us. And I'll get into some of the details now around fruit juice, benefits of fruit juice, and problems that occur when you don't have any carbohydrates in your diet. So let's actually start with why you would want to have carbohydrates. This supplement has been a miracle. Check out this review on histamine and immune from Heart and Soil. My son was suffering from a terrible skin condition, which the dermatologist diagnosed as eczema related, but neither the dermatologist nor the allergy specialist was able to fix it. Additionally, my son used to suffer with asthma and needed a daily medication. It had to be taken every night or else he'd start suffering with asthma. Now he can go weeks without it after taking a few capsules of histamine and immune from Heart and Soil supplements every day. Keep in mind, he's now 14 and started medication at age 6. This has been a miracle for my son. Thank you to Dr. Saladino and the folks at Heart and Soil Supplements. Organs are powerful, guys. Histamine and immune contains a lot of organs that are difficult to get other places. This supplement contains thymus, lung, kidney, spleen, and liver. All of those are involved in the immune response in some way, and the combination of them provides unique nutrients and peptides that have been helpful for so many people with immunologic issues, respiratory issues, histamine issues. So if you or someone you know has any of these conditions, check out Histamine and Immune from Heart and Soil Supplements. All of our supplements are from grass-fed, grass-finished cattle in New Zealand, the finest organs on the planet, regeneratively raised, always packaged in glass because plastic is bullshit. We don't need more plastic in our oceans. We don't need more microplastics in our food supply. You can find us at heartandsoil.co, that's .co. Our mission is to help you reclaim your birthright to radical, optimal health. I think that my example gives you some idea of why you want to have carbohydrates in your diet. And that is hormonal health. People generally almost always see their hormones get better. They feel more vital. They have better libido when they include carbohydrates in their diet. Now, sleep also gets better significantly for most people with carbohydrates in their diet. On strictly carnivorous diets, sleep disturbance is very, very common, as are muscle cramps. Let's talk about the muscle cramps for a moment. Insulin is a peptide hormone released from the beta cells of your pancreas. Insulin gets demonized like crazy, but in fact, insulin is an important vital hormone for healthy human life. And what we know, what I learned, and I've spoken about this many times in the past, is that when you eat carbohydrates of any type, but I would prefer honey and fruit, as I've said, your insulin goes up and your blood sugar will go up. Now, that's a good thing for so many reasons. That insulin signaling is anti-catabolic. It's not anabolic, but it's anti-catabolic, which means it preserves the muscle tissue of your body. It will improve your antioxidant status. There are links between insulin signaling and glutathione, which is the body's master antioxidant. And at the level of the kidneys, that insulin signaling is essential, I would say indispensable, for preservation, that is resorption, of electrolytes. Sodium, potassium, chloride, calcium, magnesium. That insulin signaling at the level of the kidneys is essential for that. I think that there are thousands of pounds of electrolyte supplements sold, perhaps unnecessarily, to people who are too low carb and they are losing their electrolytes because they don't have enough insulin signaling at the level of their kidney. Because they don't have enough insulin signaling at the level of their kidneys. Now, this happened to me. This has happened to so many people. So perhaps this is you. So there's really no argument that this insulin signaling is beneficial for humans. On the other side of the coin, those in the low carb space who I respect will sometimes argue that most insulin resistance is insulin induced, meaning that hyperinsulinemia, eating more carbohydrates, spikes your insulin, and this leads to insulin resistance. This is just false. There's no good evidence for this in free living humans. In order to create this in a human, you need to put a special clamp on them, a euinsulinemic hyperglycemic clamp. You need to do crazy things to humans. You need to pump them full of exogenous processed sugars via their veins to get this to happen. I suppose you could recreate a situation in which your insulin is consistently high by eating Cheetos 24 hours a day. You could never sleep, or mainlining sugar all day and most of the night. Because if you're sleeping and you're not eating, your body's not going to have that sugar coming in, and your body will go back to some level of normalcy from just pure sugar. I've spoken about the rice diet in the past, but this is an example of a diet used by Walter Kempner in the 40s and 50s, I believe, to cure diabetics. And these people were morbidly obese, hundreds of pounds overweight, and he fed them white rice and pure cane sugar. And they lost weight, and they become insulin sensitive. And then after liberalization of the diet, they remain healthy and their diabetes does not return. In fact, this is such a striking study that I'll show the study on YouTube so you guys can see it. Here's one of the studies published by Walter Kempner, the effect of a rice diet on diabetes mellitus associated with vascular disease. And I think that if you read the study, you will see that the effects were pretty astounding. So the benefits are striking. They are significant improvements in insulin sensitivity, which is persistent even after the liberalization of the diet. I'll show one more image on YouTube. This is a picture of weight loss from people on this diet, and there are many more examples of like this from Walter Kempner's studies, and the findings are striking. I mean, the literal change in shape of these humans is massive from significantly obese humans, and there's even more striking photos that are out there on the internet if you look for this, to very skinny humans on a diet of pure, I would say, carbohydrates from rice and sugar. Now, this, I think, flies in the face of the idea that blood glucose spikes are causing you to be fat, or that blood glucose spikes from carbohydrates will cause you to become diabetic. And that is my point in saying this. So where are we left? I hope that we're left with the appreciation for the fact that having carbohydrates in your diet has value, and that we should not fear these blood glucose spikes, nor should we fear the insulin that comes along with them. Now, I know there will be many people in the audience who are thinking, I'm obese. Is this okay for me? I'm diabetic. I'm pre-diabetic. I have a family history of diabetes. What should I do? So certainly if you are metabolically healthy, including carbohydrates in your diet will improve your performance, your sleep, your mood, your libido, and your muscle, I would say, maintenance and muscle gains, undoubtedly, in my opinion. And I believe that for those of you who are pre-diabetic, obese, looking to lose weight, having some carbohydrates in your diet is also valuable, but that you should scale those carbohydrates based on your activity levels. I think a lot gets made of the fact that I've publicly said that I'm eating 200 to 300 grams of carbohydrates a day, and then people don't always frame that in the proper way, that I am also surfing 2 to 3 hours a day and skating and lifting weights or swimming in a river. And I'm pretty active for a human. I would say I exercise every single day because I like to exercise, not because I'm feeling there's an imperative to do that. So the amount of carbohydrates I eat as a metabolically healthy, fairly muscular 46-year-old man may not be the right amount of carbohydrates for you. But I think that for most of you, having some carbohydrates in your diet will be of significant benefit. How much should you have in your diet? I think that the lower end for humans is probably around 100 grams of carbohydrates a day. I do not think that you as a human should go below 100 grams of carbohydrates. That's everyone. If you're obese, if you're pre-diabetic, if you're diabetic, having 100 grams of carbohydrates in your diet a day, I think, is the bottom end. And as I've shared in the past, I won't share the study now, but I've done many times, there are studies in diabetics given 125 to more than 125 grams of honey per day, who improved their insulin sensitivity based on fasting glucose metrics and other metrics of insulin sensitivity. So again, there are healthy ways to eat carbohydrates. And I think that another point that I want to make in this podcast is that we must not conflate research done on pure fructose, on processed sugars, especially high fructose corn syrup, with whole food sources of carbohydrates like fruit or like honey. I've spoken about honey multiple times in the past, so I won't talk about honey as much in this podcast, but I will talk about fruit and the fruit juice studies, which I think you'll find quite interesting. Now, the last piece of this before I get into the fruit juice studies will be this question around food addiction. I know there are some people out there who feel like they have difficulty maintaining discipline on a diet, and that when they eat foods with sugar, even fruit or fruit juice, their blood sugar spikes and they lose control. Now, in these situations, I think there's an argument to be made for limiting carbohydrates, but I think that this is the minority of people out there. And I think there's probably something else going on that is causing people to feel that way that may need correction. There's a good example that I'm reminded of here, which is that when I was in Los Angeles, I did a podcast with Mari Llewellyn, and she doesn't have food addiction, but she doesn't have good GI reactions to fruit. And my sense was that she had dysbiosis, sometimes known as SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is really a misnomer. And in fact, when she did get tested, she did end up having SIBO dysbiosis. And so for those of you who don't react well to honey or fruit or are sensitive to FODMAPs, quote unquote, FODMAPS, that is a gut issue primarily. That is not an issue with fruit and honey. That is a gut issue that needs to get resolved, in my belief. And I've come to believe that the best way to resolve that gut issue is with something like raw dairy. I've done another recent podcast on raw dairy. And a reason that I think it's so essentially criminal that raw dairy is illegal in many states or not easily obtained in many states. Recently talking to a friend in Australia, New South Wales, and she was telling me that raw milk is illegal there. I've spoken to people in Canada. Raw milk is illegal in Canada. That's a subject for a different podcast, but I think there are, it's criminal that a healing food for humans that has so much biological integrity, so much biological value is illegal in parts of the world. I think that talks to broader issues about where we are as humans. But I want to reemphasize the point so that many of you understand this. I believe that if you have reactions to fruit and honey, fix your gut. And I think the simplest way to think about that is fix your gut by including raw dairy. If you're lactose intolerant, start slowly, use a fermented raw dairy like a kefir, and your body will almost invariably begin to metabolize the lactose on its own. That's been my experience. That's been the experience of so many people that I've worked with and talked to, that over time, your body can regain the ability to metabolize lactose. So there is some degree of lactose intolerance that can happen. And that gets better over time because raw milk, I learned this from Mark McAfee when I was at Raw Farm in Fresno. You can listen to that podcast if you want. Contains the bacteria necessary to give your body the information to produce this lactase or that can produce the lactase themselves. And you can become lactose tolerant again. I certainly have no problems with raw milk now. And in the past with pasteurized milk, and even with some amounts of raw milk, I would have lactose intolerance. So it's possible to get back there if you would like to. And I think that raw dairy is an incredibly healing food for humans and an incredibly safe food the majority of the time, especially if you know the sources that you're getting it from. So that's a key caveat there as well. The other thing to know if you're shifting your gut microbiome or you believe you have dysbiosis, aka SIBO, is that there may be some degree of die-off as you begin to shift your gut microbiome. I've had a couple of friends tell me that when they drink colostrum or that when they take hardened soil grass-fed colostrum supplements, that they get bloating. And to me, this is an indication that the bacteria, the immunoglobulins in the colostrum, the immunoactive components, the biological components of the colostrum are doing something. And if any of you have ever taken a probiotic and gotten diarrhea from taking a probiotic, you understand that when you introduce new bacteria or new immunologic components, immunoglobulins that are concentrated in colostrum, there is often a die-off if there's an incompatibility between those populations. So this is how you shift your gut flora. Drinking yogurt, or I would say raw yogurt, especially raw kefir, raw dairy. Some people have worsening of skin issues immediately when they do this, and then it gradually improves over time. And I think this is probably a flare potentially related to inflammation, die-off of bacteria, leading to breakdown of the cell membrane, endotoxin, aka lipopolysaccharide. So understand that shifting your gut flora is not always easy, and there may be some uphill before you get to the downhill, but that not every reaction to a raw dairy, whether it's bloating, slightly flare in the skin issues, is a bad thing. Sometimes that happens when you have a die-off. And I think that the way to combat that most simply is to take something like charcoal. So we're kind of off path now on the fruit juice, but I think this is a valuable tangent. And I just want to share this with you all, that if you have gut issues, if you can't tolerate fruit and honey, and you believe you have dysbiosis, and this is almost something you can diagnose symptomatically, you don't need fancy testing to do this, but you can do fancy testing if you would like to corroborate this idea. Doing raw dairy, I think, is the simplest path there, the most naturalistic path, the path that makes the most sense evolutionarily. But if the raw dairy is then triggering for you or causing GI issues, take it with some charcoal and see if that helps. So let's swing back to the fruit juice. And the last thing I want to mention before we get there is this often repeated notion that blood sugar spikes will increase glycation. Now, I think this is particularly misleading because we all have glycation in our bodies. No one has a hemoglobin A1C of zero because no one has a fasting blood sugar of zero. And no one has a blood sugar of zero ever. If you want zero glycation, you will be dead because you must have glucose in your blood to run your body. So zero glycation equals death. So I think that this notion that more blood sugar equals more glycation is misleading. And if you look at the hemoglobin A1C levels of people who are strictly carnivorous, eating zero carb versus mine, often mine is significantly lower. I'll tell you that when I was a strict carnivore, my A1C was 5.6. I've seen them at 5.8 on strict carnivores because their fasting blood sugar is so high all of the time. So the amount of glycation is not always equal to blood sugar spikes. It's a complicated equation. My hemoglobin A1C runs between 4.8 and 5.2, depending on what I'm doing. I've shown this in my blood work multiple times, and that is significantly lower than many strict carnivores or people on ketogenic diets. So if you want zero blood sugar spikes with zero carbohydrates, you will in fact have more glycation. Now, glycation, advanced glycation end products are complex. I've done previous videos on this. I'm not going to go deeply down this rabbit hole, but suffice it to say that I don't believe that worrying about spiking your blood sugar two or three times a day, eating fruit and honey, is in any way worsening your health. And I'll show that with multiple studies with fruit juice and all the benefits of fruit juice. And that this glycation issue is more kind of misleading ideation around blood sugar fearing. There are so many benefits to having a blood sugar, quote, spike. This is normal human physiology. It's how you actually get many of the metabolic processes in your body to work and to run. This is vital, abundant life. Don't fear this. Don't fear glycation. Now, excess glycation happens at massively elevated blood sugar levels. And in fact, many of the studies looking at blood sugar oscillations and saying that they're harmful are looking at blood sugar levels that are essentially non-physiologic. They're quite pathological. 180 milligrams per deciliter or 270 milligrams per deciliter, massively high blood sugars. That's 10 or 15 millimoles in studies looking at the oscillation of blood sugar and their effect on blood vessels. I think most of us, if we're metabolically healthy and we eat some fruit, an apple, a banana, an orange, honey, milk, our blood sugar should go nowhere near 180, maybe 150, 140, but then it goes right back down. So again, I think there's good intentions behind this attention to blood sugar levels, but that the actual manifestations of this are fraught with inconsistencies and that we don't need to fear these blood sugar spikes, especially when we're doing it with natural sugars like fruit and honey. For those who really want to go down this rabbit hole, I've done a whole video on glycation and fruit and fructose. We can link to it in the description of this video on YouTube. And I pointed out that there are advanced glycation end products, specifically MGO or methylglyoxal, which are significantly increased on ketogenic diets. So 1.5 to 2.4x increase in methylglyoxal on a ketogenic diet. This has been shown repeatedly in multiple trials. I've discussed it and shown the papers in the past, but spiking your blood sugar leads to more glycation is not always the case. Sometimes not eating carbohydrates leads to more advanced glycation end products. And MGO, methylglyoxal levels in the human body have been associated with significant pathologies. So this idea that more blood sugar spikes equals more glycation equals more aging is false. It's not supported by the science. This idea that blood sugar spikes are harmful for you is false. It's not supported by the science. And again, I would love to have some people on the podcast who have differing ideas on this, specifically Glucose Goddess or any of these other people, but they've been unwilling to come on the podcast and have those conversations. So I don't know what to do. Other than to respectfully mention their name on the podcast and continue reaching out to them. But this is the problem that I'm having at this point, guys, is that very few people who have different ideas than me are willing to come on the podcast and discuss those ideas. I think that, I suppose I'll just enumerate those people so you guys know who I'm talking about now. I'm doing this respectfully, but I think that it needs to be said. So people like Rhonda Patrick have never been willing to come on the podcast. Peter Attia has never been willing to come on the podcast. Glucose Goddess has never been willing to come on the podcast. Robert Lustig has never been willing to come on the podcast. So again, I say this with the most respect, but I think that in the spirit of authenticity and honesty, I need to say that in the past, I've tried to dance around these names and ideas, but I don't know what to do, guys, because these people will not have direct conversations with me. And I've always tried to be respectful with regard to their work and never attack them personally in any way, shape, or form. I don't believe in that. But I do think that conversations of competing ideas, or not even competing, just conversations of differing ideas, are valuable. And I don't understand why in 2023, fewer and fewer people are willing to engage in doing that. My friend Max Lugavere is another example. Again, I do call Max a friend, but he specifically told me flat out on Instagram that he had no interest in debate. I don't know what to do. I'm doing the best I can to advance these ideas, but if people won't discuss differences in ideas, then it runs into a little bit of a roadblock. So I'll just mention that so you guys understand what's going on. And again, I don't mention any of those names to deride them or in any way criticize them, just to make it clear that I'm trying to have these conversations and they're very difficult to actually make happen. So now that I've gotten all of that off of my chest, let's go into some of this research on fruit juice and why you should be drinking watermelon juice right at this moment. Let's go. So in terms of fruit juice, there's research on pomegranate juice. There's research on, quote, red juice, which is a mixture of berries like tart cherry, blackberry, et cetera, which I'll show. There's research on watermelon juice. There's research on grape juice. There's research on so many different juices. I'll just start with watermelon juice. I'll go through all those different juices just to show you guys the breadth of this literature. Going into all of this would be onerous, but there's a lot of it. In fact, what would be very helpful for me is if anyone out there is aware of any study that shows harm from fruit, please put it in the comments on YouTube. I've not seen any studies other than one. There was one study I saw that showed harms of fruit in terms of NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, in people with fatty liver. It was an Iranian study. I've talked about it in the past. And when you actually look at that study and how it was done, they're not very clear about what they were giving the patients. They say fruit and fruit products. They say canned fruit. So my concern with that study is they weren't just giving people fresh fruit. So I will qualify that statement one more time. If anyone out there is familiar with any study that shows harms from fruit juice or unprocessed pure fruit, please put it in the comments on YouTube, because I've never seen this study, a study like that, not once. What I have seen are multiple studies like this one. Let's start with the watermelon juice studies. The title of this study is Supplemental Watermelon Juice Attenuates Acute Hyperglycemia-Induced Macro and Microvascular Dysfunction in Healthy Adults. So basically, what that title means is that if you give people watermelon juice for 2 weeks, right, it improves vascular endothelial function. And with that watermelon juice, they're actually giving people an oral glucose tolerance test. So they're giving people watermelon juice. In this study, it was 6 men, 11 women, 2 weeks of daily watermelon juice, 500 mLs of watermelon juice, or a control drink, followed by an oral glucose tolerance test. And what they found in the conclusions was that 2 weeks of daily watermelon juice improved flow-mediated dilatation, which is a fancy word for the way an artery contracts after it has been constricted with a blood pressure cuff, essentially. And that is a measure of endothelial function. The inside of your blood vessels is the endothelium. So the blood vessel vascular function is often measured with flow-mediated dilatation. So watermelon juice improved that, and it improves some aspects of microvascular function, which is the smaller blood vessels. This is called the NIRSVOT, which is a sort of esoteric test, but just suffice it to say that even small blood vessels and medium-sized blood vessels improved in their function during experimentally induced acute hyperglycemia in healthy adults. They experimentally induced acute hyperglycemia with an oral glucose tolerance test. So they're giving people watermelon juice plus a drink of soda. They call it glucola, and it's essentially soda. It's a big bolus of pure glucose, not a whole food. So you get hyperglycemia from glucose glucola drinks, which causes impairments in vascular endothelial function impairments and flow-mediated dilatation, but giving people watermelon juice improved that. So this simple single study highlights the difference between a glucose drink, like a soda, and a whole food form of sugar like watermelon juice. And I fear that in the research that has been discussed by many in the space, these two things get conflated. They are not the same. I've seen friends of mine in the keto community write tweets saying that honey is the same as sugar. Honey is the same as Coca-Cola. I think that's false. And I think the research bears that out. Another study with watermelon juice, the effect of watermelon juice supplementation on heart rate variability and metabolic response to an oral glucose challenge. This one is again, randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled crossover trial. So you can see here, watermelon juice preserved high-frequency power, which is one of the metrics that people use in the heart rate variability when compared with the placebo treatment. So in this study, the watermelon juice, which is a natural source of L-arginine and L-citrulline, substrates used for the synthesis of nitric oxide, something that does improve endothelial function, is involved in blood vessel dilatation, improved heart rate variability in humans that were also given a glucola-glucose challenge. So I think that some people have said that beets are nature's Viagra. I would say watermelon juice is like nature's Viagra because beets are full of oxalates. I don't think beets or beetroot juice is a great thing for humans. You might get some nitric oxide precursors, but you're also going to get a ton of oxalates, which I've spoken about in the past. Not great for humans. Why not just drink watermelon juice? Way more delicious, very few oxalates, and beneficial. So one more study on watermelon juice. The title is Watermelon Juice, a Novel Functional Food to Increase Circulating Lycopene in Older Women. And this lycopene levels have been associated with all sorts of beneficial things in humans. Interestingly, lycopene is also found in egg yolks and grass-fed versus grain-fed meat. So if you feed a cow grass, it is going to have much more lycopene in its meat. So lycopene is not just obtainable from things like watermelon or plants. It's also obtainable from egg yolks and meat, but watermelon juice, clearly beneficial for humans. You guys may have seen me do some Instagram reels or something with watermelon juice. So I wanted to show those specifically. Now, orange juice has a ton of research, much of which I've spoken about in the past. The effects of red orange juice intake on endothelial function and inflammatory markers in adult subjects with increased cardiovascular risk. The conclusions here are clear. 7-day consumption of red orange juice improves endothelial function, reduces inflammation in non-diabetic subjects with increased cardiovascular risk. That same thing cannot be said for soda, for pure sugar, but similar results have been found with honey. So there is a clear difference in the way that the body responds to fruit juice versus processed sugar. Now, again, at the beginning of the podcast, I said this, but it's important to reiterate this. Even those people who are okay with fruit are not okay with fruit juice. But none of these studies are done with anything but fruit juice. There's no fiber in any of this. What we're looking at here are probably compounds in these juices that improve nitric oxide, improve other things in the human body, markers of antioxidant status, which is a whole bugaboo that I've talked about in the past. You can see here in this study, concentrations of CRP, IL-6, and TNF-alpha decrease significantly with red orange juice. So if spiking your blood sugar is so bad, then why do all those metrics get better? And this is not a small amount of orange juice. This is 500 milliliters, half a liter of red orange juice per day. That's a significant amount of orange juice. For those of you who aren't so interested in the metric system, that's 17 ounces of orange juice per day. That's a massive glass of orange juice. That's a very big glass of orange juice to be drinking every day, improves all of those metrics. But wait, there's more. Another study, drinking orange juice increases total antioxidant status and decreases lipid peroxidation, that is the oxidation of your lipids in adults. Well, that sounds good. If you guys heard the debate that I did with Dr. Allo on lipids and cardiovascular risk, you'll know that I believe that oxidized LDL is a major problem for humans. I think most LDL gets oxidized in the subendothelial intimal space, and decreasing the amount of oxidized LDL, the propensity of lipids to oxidize, which is essentially lipid peroxidation, is a very good thing to do in humans. So orange juice improves endothelial function, improves lipid peroxidation, improves inflammatory markers, improves antioxidant status. However, the total plasma antioxidant capacity was significantly increased with a P of less than 0.05. Lipid peroxidation significantly decreased, P is less than 0.05. After orange juice consumption, the authors go on to say drinking orange juice may protect the cardiovascular system by increasing total plasma antioxidant status and lowering lipid peroxidation independent of other cardiovascular risk markers evaluated by the study. So again, if spiking your blood sugar is so bad, if fruit juice is so bad, then why does it do these beneficial things for humans? Yet another study, 2003, American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, the effect of orange juice intake on vitamin C concentrations and biomarkers of antioxidant status in humans, the results are essentially the same. Drinking 500 mLs of orange juice per day, 17 ounces, increases the plasma concentrations of vitamin C, no surprise there, decreases concentrations of a prostaglandin known as 8-epi-PGF2-alpha in humans. These effects were significantly more pronounced in smokers. So if you're a smoker, drink orange juice, even among smokers, because their baseline vitamin C is lower and their prostaglandins are higher, they're going to have significant reductions in these, but it happened in both healthy and smoking subjects. So again, 8-epi prostaglandin F2-alpha is an inflammatory marker and significantly reduced with orange juice. So orange juice is perhaps the thing that gets the most hate online when I show it, but I juice my oranges fresh every day. I probably drink something like 16 ounces of orange juice per day. I will drink watermelon juice per day in addition to that, and I will eat fruit. Right now in Costa Rica, the fruit in season is rambutan, also known as mamoncino, or mangosteen is another fruit that I'll eat. We have papaya, we have pineapple here year-round, bananas. I've spoken about my diet specifically on other platforms, so I won't go into it in a lot of detail here, but I think that there are so many benefits. Again, orange juice is there. Let's talk about some other stuff. I don't know about you guys, but cherries are perhaps one of my favorite fruits ever. And I love cherries. So I always get excited when I see studies like this. The effect of tart cherry juice on biomarkers of inflammation, oxidative stress in older adults. This is 12 weeks consumption of tart cherry juice lowered the systolic blood pressure of adults. It also lowered LDL, which you guys know, I think is not the best predictor of cardiovascular risk, but regardless, it did that. There were 37 men and women ages 65 to 80. They drank 480 ml of tart cherry juice or a control drink daily for 12 weeks. So we're having about the same amount. 480 mls is about 16 ounces versus 17 ounces at 500 mls. They say, present study suggests the ability of tart cherry juice to reduce systolic blood pressure and LDL, in part maybe due to its antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties. The metrics they look at are increased levels of DNA repair activity, which they measure by something called 8-oxoguanine glycolase, and it lowered CRP compared to the control group. So there's tons of studies like this. Tart cherry juice in athletes. There's a literature review and commentary here. Timing and dosage vary widely. Most studies use 8 to 12 ounces. Concentrate twice a day. 5-day loading phase before the event. 2 to 3 days after to promote recovery. Tart cherry juice lessens pain, accelerates strength recovery and exercise, decreases blood markers of inflammation, oxidative stress. These improvements occur in both strength and endurance exercise athletes. So again, you guys will hear me ask this multiple times in this podcast. How can spiking your blood sugar be bad all of the time when there are so many benefits to all of these fruit juices with no fiber? Let's talk about grape juice. Grape juice has some very striking benefits. Concord grape juice supplementation improves memory function in older adults with mild cognitive impairment. So now we're out of the realm of inflammation, endothelial function, DNA damage, and inflammatory markers, and into the realm of memory and cognitive function. This is controlled versus Concord grape juice for 12 weeks. Significant improvement in measure of verbal learning and non-significant enhancement of verbal and spatial recall. Concord grape juice may enhance cognitive function for older adults with early memory decline. Another study, commercial grape juice inhibits the in vitro oxidation of human LDL proteins. So this is lipid peroxidation, LDL oxidation. Again, this is done in a test tube because it's hard to study LDL oxidation in the human body, but grape juice inhibited the oxidation of LDL. That's a benefit. Grape juice but not orange or grapefruit juice inhibits human platelet aggregation. So if you want to in human platelet aggregation, platelets are blood cells that are involved in forming a clot. Grape juice is at least the most clinically studied thing for this. They say drinking purple grape juice for 1 week reduced the whole blood platelet aggregation response. Different juices appear to have different benefits for humans. Different juices, probably a variety of juices, is beneficial in your diet, which means drink more fruit juice. Some people would get triggered if they heard me say that. Purple grape juice improves endothelial function, reduces the susceptibility of LDL cholesterol to oxidation in patients with coronary artery disease. This is 15 adults with coronary artery disease. Grape juice for 14 days. They looked at, again, flow-mediated dilatation and the susceptibility of LDL particles to oxidation. Even a short-term ingestion of grape juice improved FMD, flow-mediated dilatation, and reduces LDL susceptibility to oxidation in coronary artery disease patients. Makes me a little bit sad we don't have grapes in Costa Rica, but every time I go to the States, I will eat grapes or make grape juice. So lots of benefits to grape juice there. Pomegranate juice also has benefits. A number of reviews have been published on this, the effects of pomegranate juice consumption on blood pressure and cardiovascular health. Pomegranate juice consumption may reduce systolic blood pressure, appears to inhibit serum angiotensin-converting enzyme activity. They say it is a convincingly heart-healthy fruit. And fruit juice, another study with essentially the same title, Pomegranate Juice, a Heart-Healthy Fruit Juice. Pomegranate juice has been shown to exert significant anti-atherogenic, that's anti-coronary artery disease, antioxidant, anti-hypertensive, and anti-inflammatory effects. But it will raise your blood sugar and it will spike your insulin. But you shouldn't fear those things. So again, I'm just really trying to hammer home the idea, guys, that there is a lot of research on fruit juice, which shows that it is beneficial to humans. And I will not stop there. I'll show you a few more studies just to really emphasize this point. Anthocyanin polyphenol-rich fruit juice reduces oxidative cell damage in an intervention study with patients on hemodialysis. In this study specifically, they used a red fruit juice, which was a combination of red grape juice, 40%, 20% blackberry juice, 15% cherry juice, and 30% black currant juice. They used a mixed juice, which was 40% red grape juice, 20% blackberry juice, 15% cherry juice, 15% black currant juice, and 10% elderberry juice. And they found that there was a significant decrease in DNA oxidative damage, protein and lipid peroxidation, NF-kappa B activity was decreased, and there was an increase in glutathione level and status during juice uptake. So that is a lot of different metrics in these people with hemodialysis who are certainly at risk of all of these issues. Hemodialysis is done for people who have end-stage kidney disease, and many of these same things are found repeatedly. One more study, fruit juice consumption modulates antioxidative status, immune status, and DNA damage. You can look up that study as well if you're interested. But what we see here repeatedly, and this is just a sampling, I didn't even show you guys all of the research. This is by no means an exhaustive list of all of the research that has been done on fruit juice. Again, please put any studies that you're aware of in the comments that are done on pure fruit or fruit juice. We consistently see benefits in terms of antioxidant markers, DNA damage, lipid peroxidation, blood pressure, flow-mediated dilatation, endothelial function. Some researchers claim these things are anti-atherogenic. Other metrics of oxidative stress are also assayed in multiple studies, DNA repair for fruit juice. So my point with this is just to make a case that fruit juice is fine for humans. Preferably your fruit juice is from organic fruit. Preferably it's raw and not pasteurized. Preferably you have made it yourself. I invested in an orange press, which can also be used for pomegranate. We don't get pomegranate here in Costa Rica, but I love pomegranate juice in an orange press or a juicer. I've invested in both. I will make mango juice sometimes. I make mostly watermelon juice and orange juice. Those are the juices that I will drink during the day, in addition to coconut water. I'll have to see if I can find some studies on coconut water. I'm not aware of anything off the top of my head, but I'm often surprised at what's out there in the research. And consistently, I find that whole food forms of sugar are not harmful for humans. And we see this. Again, there's a lot of research on fruits. That was a sampling of the research on fruit juices. And I think any one of those benefits would be great help to most humans. I think that most of us would benefit by having those things in our life, those benefits, DNA damage repair, et cetera, decreased LDL oxidation, the list goes on and on. Do not fear blood sugar spikes, and do not fear insulin or any of these things. One more study that I wanted to show here, title is The Relevance of Glycemic Index and Glycemic Load for Body Weight, Diabetes, and Cardiovascular Disease. Now, if you read the title and you try to guess what it says in the abstract, you might think that glycemic index essentially looks at the rapidity with which a sugar will spike your blood sugar. Glycemic load adjusts that for the amount of carbohydrates that are in a food. But both of these metrics are looking at blood sugar spikes. But if you look at the research, they say the strongest intervention studies typically find a little relationship among GI and GR. So glycemic index and glycemic response, which is a synonym for glycemic load, and the physiological measures of disease risk. Even for observational studies, the relationship between GI and GR and disease outcomes is limited. And they're looking at things like diabetes, body weight, and cardiovascular disease. So I have never seen studies which contradict this review, but the overall perspective here is that there really is no solid evidence in humans that the glycemic index or the glycemic load, glycemic response of your foods affects body weight, affects diabetes, or affects cardiovascular disease. The quality of your foods may affect those things if they are highly processed, containing emulsifiers, dyes, seed oils, et cetera. But the actual GI and GR, the research just isn't there. And again, I would love to have conversations with people who have different beliefs to see if they can teach me something. Maybe I can show them research they're not aware of. But these are difficult studies to make happen. And I think that the fear of any blood glucose spike is something that is harmful for humans in the long run. Now, I'm keenly aware that when I say that, people may point fingers at me and accuse me of fear-mongering as well around vegetables, something that I want to be very savvy to. People may look at me and say, you're saying these people are sowing seeds of doubt and fear around glucose spikes, but you, Paul Saladino, are sowing seeds of fear around vegetables. For those of you who have seen my work on other social media platforms, you'll know that I generally believe that if you are thriving, why would you change anything about your diet? And my overarching philosophy is that in a lot of people who have illness, whether it's GI issues, gastrointestinal issues, autoimmune issues, sleep issues, eliminating or reducing a lot of vegetables can be helpful. But if you're thriving, keep doing what you're doing. In fact, just the other day, we posted a reel on Instagram saying, I don't really have a problem with you eating vegetables. If you're doing good, if you don't have joint pain, if your body is where you want it to be, if your mood is good, if you sleep well, if you have good muscle recovery, if your joints don't ache, I guess vegetables aren't really that problematic for you. And including some of them in your diet is probably fine. I don't believe vegetables are deathly for all people. I do believe that vegetables contain more defense chemicals than fruits and honey, that they are inferior sources of carbohydrates, and that many people with chronic health issues that have been unsolved find significant benefit from removing them or reducing them in their diet. That's always been my position, but I think that over time, I hope I've gotten better at communicating it more clearly. So hopefully that helps put some framework around all of this. And I think that people who have different ideas around ketogenic diets or fruit or honey or blood sugar spikes may also be framing their ideas in a similar way based on individual metrics and individual mileage, quote unquote. But I do think that conversations among people who have differing ideas would be very valuable, and I wish it happened more often. The last thing I'll mention as I wrap up this podcast is that when I talk about eating fruit juice, people always want to talk about non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which I think is reasonable. But like so many of the other ideas that I've tried to present in this podcast, I think the research around this does not support the idea that fruit or fruit juice worsens non-alcoholic fatty liver disease in humans in any way, shape, or form. And I think that a lot of the research around this conflates research on fructose and high fructose corn syrup with research on whole food sources of sugar, like fruit and honey. And a lot of the research with fructose and high fructose corn syrup and NAFLD is also potentially confounded by hypercaloric interventions. So here's a study saying fructose, high fructose corn syrup, sucrose, and NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. The researchers conclude, on the basis of indirect comparisons across study findings, the apparent associations between indices of liver health and fructose or sucrose intake appear to be confounded by excess energy intake. Overall, the available evidence is not sufficiently robust to draw conclusions regarding the effects of fructose, high fructose corn syrup, or sucrose consumption on NAFLD. Again, I'm not advocating that anyone consume pure fructose, pure sucrose, and ever consume high fructose corn syrup. But even within that literature, we must be honest and say that there are many researchers who believe that findings like this are confounded by hypercaloric models in humans and in animals. If you look at animal models, there's a lot of evidence that NAFLD studies are confounded by seed oils and other junk in the feeds. And let's circle back to Walter Kempner's studies with the rice diet. The people in those studies improved their diabetes, improved their insulin sensitivity, improved their weight. Those are findings that cannot coexist in human physiology with worsening of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So there's more going on with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease than simply fruit and fruit juice worsen NAFLD. And I would love to have somebody on the podcast who disagrees with me, and we can get into the research on that. But I think that when I look at the research for fruit and fruit juice, there's nothing compelling. There's nothing even remotely suggestive of fruit and fruit juice worsening NAFLD. In fact, I just showed you in excess of 10 studies showing improvements in all sorts of physiologic metrics. And I don't believe that all of those metrics get better while something like non-alcoholic fatty liver disease gets worse. What do I think is causing non-alcoholic fatty liver disease? It's probably a combination of a choline deficiency related to inadequate consumption of choline-rich foods like meat, eggs, and liver, and too many seed oils in the human diet. So with that, I'll go ahead and wrap this one up. I hope it's helpful for you guys. I hope you go drink a glass of grape juice or watermelon juice or orange juice or pomegranate juice, and that you report back on how that makes you feel. And as always, I'm continuing to learn. I think that one of the things that's interesting about doing this podcast is I'm not just interested in teaching you about the science. I'm also interested in trying to challenge you to think for yourself. Don't accept what I'm saying as canon. Question what I'm saying. Do your own research. Connect the dots. Do your own thinking about these things. I think that's the part that's magical for me, the creative part, the thinking about dots that haven't been connected yet. That's what I really like. I think that's why a lot of the things I talk about are so controversial, because they may go against the mainstream. And I'm not always right, but I hope that some of my ideas are perhaps helpful for some of you. And even if those dots have not been linked, or even if these ideas run counter to the mainstream, I know that many of you are benefiting, and that makes me proud of the work I'm doing. And I hope that in time, enough research will be done to either support or disprove it. But in the short term, we will keep thinking for ourselves and being curious and trying to connect the dots, and not necessarily believing what the mainstream tells us without questioning it.